If I could wave a magic wand and anyone who picks up the book and reads it, like that's what I want them to get from it, is that no matter who you are, no matter how outrageous, no matter how shy, whatever you are, that's enough. And you have permission to be that.
Welcome to Darken the Page, a podcast for lovers of writing and the creative process. And now, here's your host, Dave Buda.
Hello and welcome back to Darken the Page. Today's episode is with my friend Monique Darling. And Monique just finished her first book about cuddle parties, and she'll explain what that is in this episode. One thing that I absolutely think is wonderful and is a big takeaway from this episode is we spend a lot of time talking about what it takes to share vulnerably. And we've talked about this in previous episodes of this show, but there is literally no one on this planet that I think is better at this and has gone through more transformation around it than Monique. She regularly shares things that would scare everybody. I mean, just that would be so triggering and hard to, for people to share. She does it on a regular basis, and she does it mostly on Facebook too. And in this book, she's putting a lot of stuff that's really vulnerable. And we talk about her whole process there, and she gives us examples and goes through what it's like, what it was like when she was super afraid and how she got over that, and what it's like now that she's still afraid but does it anyways, and the excitement that's there sometimes. So go to the show notes at darkenthepage.com/017. As always, love to see the reviews on iTunes, and email me at darkenthepage@gmail.com with any feedback, comments, or questions. Here's the interview. I'm here today with my good friend and someone who is almost done writing her book, and I'm really excited to talk to her. I'm here with Monique Darling, and thank you so much, Monique, for just taking the time to be on this show and just to spend a little time with me. It's such a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Dave. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So tell me just a little about, give me a little background on how you came to write this book. Maybe is this your first major writing project? I mean, tell me a little about that and kind of where you're at with the book at this point.
Well, I've been writing stories since I was like 9 years old, but this is like the first official story. Mm-hmm. And it kind of wrote through me because Cuddle Party is what changed my life. And I've really been living these rules, like the rules of Cuddle Party, as my life teaching for the past 8 years. And
so fill me in on what Cuddle Party is, just so people who don't know.
Well, Cuddle Party is a workshop based on the first 45 minutes are teaching people boundaries. And by going through Cuddle Party rules, it definitely helped me reclaim my voice. And so it's an opportunity for people to be able to find their powerful no's so that they can trust their yeses. Mm-hmm. And one of the greatest things that it can also do is it helps you redefine in your head. Like, what if you could change rejection into just being redirection? Like, what if there is no such thing as rejection? Mm-hmm. And if someone tells you no, you just thank them for taking care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And you get to change your mind. And like each of the 11 rules can be life-changing in and of themselves. And definitely when you're doing them all together and you start living your life from that place, like Cuddle Party itself is just a 3.5-hour workshop that you get to practice. Mm-hmm. But then take it out of there, then it starts transforming your life.
Nice. So you've been facilitating cuddle parties for a little while, and then you decided to write a book on how the rules of Cuddle Party apply to life. Is that right?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah.
And life experiences I've had and that I've witnessed, and then how the reader can take it into their own lives.
Okay, nice. Nice. And how long have you been working on this project?
Almost a year.
Nice. Nice. And I noticed that you did some crowdfunding for this one too?
I did. Yep.
Tell me about that process. How did that go?
It was great. I got enough money to pay for my editor, which is the main thing that I wanted to do. And I know some of my other friends have done Kickstarter, and they, you know, most people really like Kickstarter, and I didn't go that route, but the crowd funding helped because I have a wide platform and friends and people that wanted to support me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so tell me about some of the expenses that you said. So you said you wanted to do an editor and what, anything else?
Yeah, well, I have a marketing person that when I get it done, then she has, she's a best-selling author herself. She lives in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so she has a whole team of people that help put together the behind the scenes so that you're self-publishing, but she does all the steps. And nice. So puts it online. Her son is an artist. And so he does the covers, and it's just a whole team of people, and everything's in place to take it from here's the finished edited copy to actually being sold.
Nice. Nice. Okay, so tell me a little about how this has been. So you've been writing it for about a year. Has it been super easy? Has it been challenging? What's been easy? What's been challenging? And what have you learned?
Okay, well, the greatest challenge was that I had only about maybe a chapter and a half total to finish writing. And so I'd taken time off at the end of the year to finish that. Mm-hmm. And right before I got home to finish, my laptop was stolen with six chapters that never got backed up anywhere. Mm-hmm. So basically six chapters were just wiped out. And so that's why it was supposed to come out now, you know, in March 1st was the original date for it to come out. And I'm still finishing the last three chapters. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing about that is first, now I have backup upon backup. So I have a little hard drive I carry with me and mm-hmm. I have one drive, and I learned that lesson. And each of the chapters that I've rewritten, I'm in such a different place that I think they're better. The people that have read them said that they really like them.
Nice.
But that's been hard to let go of. Oh, well, everybody's expecting the book, and I had the book tour set for the summer, and it's not going to be till this fall. And mm-hmm. so it's really letting go of those expectations, because my hardest challenge is that I'm on the road and I'm working 9 to 12 hours every day. Mm-hmm. Like the next 17 days, I have at least one, if not two, workshops every day. Like I don't have a day off. Mm-hmm. So, and for me, the writing process works really well when I have 5 days or a week off or a month off, and I can just sit and write for 6 or 7 hours in mm-hmm. a single day.
Yeah. How did you manage to write while on the road? Did you work in some time, or did you just have to take time off, or what did you do?
Yeah, it's basically the time off when I go home and see. I go home to Utah, which is my home base, mm-hmm. and I have a week out of each month, and so I'll take three of those days and just sit and write nonstop.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so tell me about those days when you write. What's that like?
Well, most of the time it's great because I have all these ideas that are circulating in my mind just waiting to go down on paper. Mm-hmm. And I've tried writing in, because I have a lot of friends that say, oh, well, just write what's alive for you. And mm-hmm. so I'll write part of chapter 6 here and part of chapter 9 there. And it doesn't work that way for me. Like I want to keep rewriting a chapter until I have it to the best of my ability complete. Mm-hmm. And so like chapter 7, I rewrote 13 times. Most of the other chapters I've only had to rewrite 2, maybe 3 times.
And when you say rewrite, do you mean you just scrapped it and started from scratch?
No, editing.
Okay.
There was stuff that needed to be added in. And I mean, some of it I scrapped and threw out, but it was mm-hmm. more, okay, this is as complete. I have as much downloaded as I possibly can. And then I'll mm-hmm. go back through when I'm finished and just double check. But it's been a very linear fashion. Like I need to go chapter by chapter in order for the information to, I have the outline, and I have like the quotes for the beginning of the chapters. Mm-hmm. I have the conclusion, but then the actual sitting down and writing has been chapter by chapter.
Mm-hmm. Have any of the Cuddle Party rules aided you in the writing process? Maybe that you're aware or unaware of that's been happening?
Well, that's,
if you had to pick a Cuddle Party rule that if you had to pick a Cuddle Party rule that would apply to the writing process, which one would you pick?
Rule 6, which is chapter 7, because I have my intro, is all about you're encouraged to change your mind. Mm. And so that's really diving into whatever is your bigger yes in the moment, mm-hmm. and being okay instead of doing what someone else thinks is appropriate, or holding yourself to an obligation or a commitment, is like really going with what feels most alive for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that I used to hold myself to constantly.
Yeah.
Was okay. No, I scheduled this. I made this. And then it wasn't the most alive thing for me. And like, even if something, like the way that I describe it in the book is that even if something is inappropriate, or if there's consequences, right? There's consequences for things, but that doesn't mean that it's inappropriate. So mm-hmm. society of parents and teachers and religion and stuff say this is appropriate and this is inappropriate. But animals don't have that. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it that's bred into us that, and so if you're able to let go of all of that and just start finding your own values and what you be doing in any moment, mm-hmm. then that's definitely helped with the book. It's like, okay, do I want to write? And it's being able to write from a joyful place mm-hmm. instead of, oh, I've got to get this book done or I've got to do so much. And so each day it's like, okay, if I can write for an hour, fabulous. And if I'm not in that place to write, okay, let's scrap it and let's go do what's most alive, because mm-hmm. usually whatever's happening, like in that chapter alone, then I was able to write about what happened with my laptop getting stolen and how that is applied to that rule.
Yeah, I think that's really huge. Actually, that's something that's been brought up several times on this show, is that when we feel blocked, you know, it may be time to change our mind. You know, okay, so what's clear now is that I don't want to write for whatever reason. So what do I want to do? You know, or what's clear is what I'm writing about now, what I'm trying to write about, maybe it's not what wants to be written about. And so what do I really want to talk about? And I love that, because that really does apply to changing our mind and how we can apply that principle to our life too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some of your fears as a writer?
Definitely. There's still a part of me that wants to get things right. mm-hmm. And so where this is, I've done 353 cuddle parties now. So wow. I definitely claim it as part of my baby. But like Reed Mihalko and Marsha are the founders of Cuddle Party. Mm-hmm. And so there's still a part of me of, am I accurately portraying their mission and their vision? Mm-hmm. And so there's that part, because I've definitely taken it. I've written what Cuddle Party stands for and how each rule was intended. But then I've also added on to it what my upgrades are and how I've experienced it and how I live them in my life now. Mm-hmm. So there's that fear of, oh no, it's someone else's baby. And I'm like decorating it.
You're like putting glitter and like, you know, nail polish and stuff. Yeah,
exactly. Maybe a strap on here or there.
Nice. I'm sure Reed wouldn't mind if he threw a strap on his baby. So,
that's a bad analogy, because cuddle party's non-sexual, so it's not that.
Right.
But it's like a Monique, yeah, definitely like pink glitter.
Yeah. Cuddle party. Yeah. Nice.
And so that's been a piece, and then there's a part of like, what if it really sucks? And like the people that have read it, lots of them are crying, and they're like, this is such awesome stuff, and there's so many people waiting for it to be brought out, and I'm so passionate about it. But sometimes in life, like I used to go on the perfection model, and it would be really hard for me to do things that I wasn't really good at. So I've worked on that mm-hmm. for years. But when I'm really passionate about something, I so want to be able to say it in a way that people can hear it. Mm-hmm. And there's a few things that I feel like could be controversial, and I don't want that to take away from the overall mission of the book mm-hmm. or the vision of the book.
Yeah.
But I don't leave them out either. So those are my biggest fears, are what if I never finish it?
Yeah.
And what if people hate it? What if I don't portray it accurately? And what if I, somehow took away from the vision of what Cuddle Party started as?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how was it, you know, because I find that the writing is, you know, it's just a method of communication. So a lot of times we really know what we want to portray. We want to know how we want to come across. We want to know the impact, or we know what impact we want to have on readers. And, mm-hmm. you know, if it's maybe our first book, or if we haven't been just writing a ton, sometimes it's hard to like make that sound the way we want it to sound. And it's not really a function of us. I mean, we feel it inside of us. It's really clear. But sometimes that perfectionism, it's almost like necessary in a way, because I know what I want this to sound like, and we have good taste in what it wants to sound like. You know, there was this little 1-minute clip from Ira Glass, who runs This American Life, And this was passed around the internet a bunch recently. And I loved it because he talks about how this is the pattern he's seen in a lot of people that he knows right now that are creative powerhouses, is that when they started, they would do work and they knew that it wasn't good enough because they had really good taste. And then they kept at it and kept at it and kept at it. And he said that he emphasizes that it's like we have good taste. If we know what amazing work feels and looks like, that mm-hmm. actually aids us. And it might be frustrating for the first couple of years because we aren't able to do that exactly. But by having that standard, but not beating ourselves up that we're not there, but by knowing what we want, that's actually a really important thing. And it sounds like you have that too.
Yeah. Well, I felt very blessed and kind of lucky and spoiled in a way, because I've been writing blogs and Facebook things for mm-hmm. a while now.
Yeah.
So when I've actually sit down to write, then the stuff's already there in my head. And so it's been really, really simple to get the stories out and to just, like, I'll just sit there and really, truly in like 7 hours, bam, the chapter's mostly done.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, how has writing on Facebook helped you in this process? Because that's something that I find comes up a lot. Actually, we talked about this with Jason Harrison, who I think you know too. He was mm-hmm. on the show and he talked about how Facebook actually got him back into writing, because he would start writing on Facebook and then look at that. You have a short article a lot sometimes. How has that been for you? How has Facebook helped or hurt your writing process?
Oh, it's definitely helped, because it's, first of all, when I first started writing, then I'd only write a little bit because I was so terrified of what people would think.
Uh-huh.
And I was so sure that if anyone saw all these deeper parts of me, that they would never love me. That, you know, I was like, there's so many stories in my head. And then the more that I would write and the more that I would let stuff out, even when it was terrifying to press post, then once I pressed it, it was easy. Like then it mm-hmm. was, all that stuff's gone. And there was a few people that hated me, and there's still, like, you know, some controversy over things that I put out there. Mm-hmm. But little by little, I stopped needing to edit it. I'd just write whatever happening in my mind and just be able to post it that way. And sometimes it's even, especially as I've gotten more and more busy and flying from place to place, I'll sit and write on the airplane and then post it when I land. And it's just been so fabulous to just, oh, okay, this is what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been able to help me get out of my head of trying to control how anybody else is going to think. Like, this isn't, yes, the book is for other people. And like, I'm really excited for people to be able to have these tools on a regular basis when I or other Cuddle Party facilitators can't be there.
Yeah.
But it's also my writing has, whether it's Facebook or this book or, a poetry or an email to a lover or whatever it is, it's all about being able to share, like have that, the gift is the space to be able to share. Mm-hmm. And then people are going to take it however they're going to take it. And so I've totally dropped any attachment to having it need to look like anything or people having to reply. Or like, I'll go look at comments on Facebook, but it's nothing like when I used to write. It was like, oh, what's going to happen? What are they going to say? And, mm-hmm. and it used to be with emails too, or texting and then sending to different people in my life. It would just be waiting. And now mm-hmm. it's like, sending it for me, and if they write back, it's icing. Like, it's support, it's love, it's just so much gratitude. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's completely changed. So as I write the book, it's my baby.
Yeah.
However anyone else takes it, that's going to be for them. And that's the gift, is that I have the space to be able to put it out in the world.
I absolutely love that. I really actually want to spend some more time talking about this, because out of everybody I know on Facebook, I feel like if I were to give Facebook awards, I would say, you know, most vulnerable goes to Monique Darling, and, you know, yay. And and I hear that, you know, it hasn't always been easy. Like, that just hasn't been like your way of being forever. And a big part of writing is just letting the dirty stuff out, letting the dirty laundry out, especially if you're writing, you know, personal growth stuff or about, you know, about your life. So I'm curious as to how did you do this? And I think in a lot of ways, Facebook maybe provided baby steps. Whereas if you had to launch into a book that was as vulnerable as you're making it now without Facebook, it would have been really hard. But tell me about how did you go from someone who, you know, would be really afraid to post and then also be watching to see what people think, to really just what you just said, which is such a beautiful statement about just having the space to share and really being doing it for you. Like, how did you go from start to finish there?
Well, it was really being able to play through most of the stories in my head. And so it was, what's the worst case scenario? Like, what's going to happen? What if everybody hated me? Like, what if everyone unfriended me? You know, like all of these what ifs that were sitting in my head. And then when I was able to press post anyway, and there were a few people that would have issues with what I wrote, but the majority of people, they're just like, oh, this is great. Like, we want to hear some more. Yeah. And then little by little throughout the years, and there's all these people that have written behind the scenes that said, Monique, by you sharing this, I was able to dive into these parts of my life. And I was able to say this. And like, there's this whole, nice. There's a whole group of people that say, I'm doing a Monique now. And it's just like this beautiful space of where I was so scared and so sure that it would just annihilate me. Mm-hmm. It both internally and externally, it's done the opposite. And but it was only by being able to face those fears and then like really write outrageous stuff. Like my husband and I wrote our deepest stuff of resentment and pain and like things that we'd held in, mm-hmm. and we're able to share that. And all of a sudden, at least both of us, and we have a relationship like we never had.
Yeah. Yeah. Wouldn't that be actually kind of funny if the worst case scenario of people like everybody unfriending you, like, can you just imagine that? I mean, you post something and then all of a sudden you look and there's zero friends. You're like, oh my God, everybody actually unfriended me. It's almost like so ridiculous. Yeah.
But that's the thing, is that there's no more inside of me of being immobilized, or like if that happened, I have so much trust in myself that by the next day I'd have 5,000 more friends, Dave.
Yeah.
And they would be friends that actually want to talk about what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest change. But I couldn't have put this book out. I mean, I probably could have without Facebook, but it would have been so much harder because I would have had all of these stories running in my head of wondering what's going to happen when people picked it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and having... So yeah, having yeah, go ahead. Uh-huh. I was going to say, having people support that opening through Facebook has been huge for me. And a lot of other people, and obviously you too, where it's like we open a little bit and people say, yay, you know, see some more, and open a little more, yay, come on out, yay. And that encouragement, it provides such a beautiful gradual blossoming.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very similar with me too. I have, you know, different groups of friends in my Navy life, you know, because I was a Navy officer for about 5 years, and that ended in 2010. So I had a big contingent of my friends that were from the Navy, and, you know, they have a little different value system than my like new age hippie friends. And so, you know, sometimes I'd post something and I'd see the old crowd, and not everybody in the Navy is just one certain way, you know, I'd have a big crossover, but it was interesting to see that, there's a group of people out there who aren't necessarily cheering me on to say some of the things I'm saying, and there are this group of people that I may lose some friends, but I'm gaining friends in the areas that really matter to me. And I think that's so important, like what you said about, hey, if I lost all these friends, then I'd have new friends, but new friends that would support who I'm being today, not who I was being 5 years ago. That's huge.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And I mean, that's been the biggest gift from Facebook, is this huge, huge self-trust that I never had growing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What would you say to someone who says, you know, hey, I would love to post, but, you know, I'm going to get raked over the coals if I say some of the things that are on my mind here, and I can't post that on Facebook because I'm gonna, you know, that's gonna be horrible. Like, what would you say to those people?
Well, what I do say to them is that they're raking themselves over the coals 1,000 times a day. Like, imagine how many times that they're thinking, oh, I really want to post this, I really want to say this, but, and whatever those fears are, that's what they're doing to themselves. Because these are all the judgments that we have on ourselves, whatever we think other people are going to show up with. Like, we wouldn't even think that if we weren't judging ourselves for it. And so when you're able to post it, and so I'll tell them, just go write a sentence. What would be the hardest thing for you to post right now? And just write one sentence. and just notice and feel and observe all the things that are happening inside of you. You never have to press post. never have to sit on there, but just write it and feel how you're feeling. If you dare, post it and then just breathe for a minute and see what happens. And that's one sentence. And then if they're able to do that, then do two sentences the next day or the next week. Mm-hmm. And like each time, just go a little bit further. Or if they're really, really courageous, then I'm write the scariest story that you're absolutely certain that everyone's going to hate you for, and go post that, because then everything else is going to be just be easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what I've noticed in watching you do this over the years too is that you've really gone from okay, I'm afraid and I'm going to do this, to I would say that you're kind of almost getting off on it at this point. Like, I noticed that you're really going for for everything in that scary box. I mean, it's almost exciting. So that nervousness is maybe, and again, I'm just kind of like guessing here, but that, you know, that nervousness is kind of turned into excitement, you know, much like a performer before they go on stage, if they've done it enough, then stops feeling nervous, but now is feeling excitement. And that excitement might feel the same in their body, but it's just a different interpretation of it. You know, what can you say about where you're at now, having gotten, not necessarily gotten over the fear, because there's always fear there, but what's it like now to go into that space?
Well, there is some excitement, and often then it's like, where is what feels good, and what do I want to share that's real there? But there's still definitely fear, and there's still places of, okay, what is it that I'm not saying? Like, there's still that constant, where are the places that I'm still hiding? Mm-hmm. And if there was nothing that was off the table, what is it that I want to write? Mm-hmm. And so that's been really helpful in determining, again, because I'm writing for myself, even though it's for all these thousands of people on Facebook that read it, it's still, each writing is for me being able, there's a message that I want to be able to let go of. Mm-hmm. And so there is excitement. I'm just more, if anything, it comes back to that self-trust of, no matter what happens, I'm going to be okay. And I'd much rather have it out there than stuck inside of myself. Mm-hmm. And for me, Facebook has been a great platform to be able to get it outside of myself. And so I feel like that my outsides are matching up with my insides, and anyone that's interacting with me, then they get to have that, all of that, Monique.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how do you deal with the occasional, and this may not even happen that much anymore, but how do you deal with the opposition to what you share? Does that still happen? And how do you deal with that?
It happens all the time. Like my family, just one, as a member of my extended family, just got really upset yesterday and started posting a bunch of stuff on mine and my husband's wall, and of their particular judgments. And it's still hard, like, especially when it's family. But for the most part, if it's a fan or a non-fan, you know, someone that went from a fan or a friend to like, wow, what are you doing, Monique? Then I'll engage them a little bit on the platform that they've written, you know, like on the comment thread. Uh-huh. But I'll also invite them to share more with me. And that's been a huge change, because before it would be really hard to hear someone's feedback. And now I'm just like, oh, this is so awesome. You know, thank you so much for your courage to share that. And I used to say that, because those are, you know, Reed would say those are the right words to say, and say, tell me more. And so it was kind of like role playing, and okay, thank you for sharing, tell me more. But really being afraid to, now it's such a gift, because if someone's willing to tell you the direct opposition, or, you know, it's their judgments, it's just what's happening inside of them. And it's only becomes mine if I take it personally. And so I'm really grateful. And I'm like, look, can you tell me more? Like, I'd love to hear more. What else is happening inside of you? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I don't have enough time or bandwidth, but to be able to hear and like engage further. Mm-hmm. But at the very least, I'll thank them for sharing what they shared.
Yeah.
Because it's really important to me that they feel like that they have a right to be heard.
Yeah. Yeah. Because a lot of times that's a vulnerable share for them. It's just not coming in the form of this kind of softness. You know, it's hey, I'm angry about this, but it's hard for me to, you know, and a lot of times, like, yeah, my judgments are some of the hardest things for me to share. You know, my anger, my hate, You know, it's like, well, okay, that's there too. And I really appreciate your perspective in that. And that's also, you know, that opens up things too, when you allow people to criticize.
Yeah, because they're only talking from where they're at. And so the big key there is being able to turn it around to, oh, okay, like this is how they're seeing it. Like, they're giving you a grander perspective than you could possibly ever see yourself, because we all have blind spots and we all have a way that we see the world. And so they're offering you this brand new perspective, and it doesn't have to be your own unless you take it on. It doesn't have to be you. You don't have to feel judged or rejected or, you know, whatever those things that we're feeling inside. You can just, oh, this is their perspective. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes a huge gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've also noticed for myself that there was this shift that happened. I'd written this post on my blog, and I knew it was going to get a lot of traffic because I wrote it about the Naval Academy community, and my blog gets read by a lot of people in that community. And I posted it, and then within 5 minutes, I had this comment, and it was a comment from a guy that had said, "Wow, boy, you are totally full of yourself, and way to go, buddy." I mean, it was like very snarky. And I'd written the post in a very like kind of ranty way. And so, you know, my first reaction, of course, was like, well, who does this guy think he is? Like, fuck him, you know? And then I went back because there was no one there to talk to. I mean, I'm literally just talking to myself. So I was like, okay. So I went back and actually read the post, and I thought to myself, you know, I actually kind of can see how I'm a little bit full of myself in this post. You know, this guy is not totally false. He may be being a jerk about it, but he actually has some valid points. Yeah. So I went back and I edited some of the lines. I actually did a lot of edits to that article, and I found, wow, actually, I'm really grateful that this guy posted this, because now I'm saving myself a lot of face, because it went on to be read by thousands of people. So I actually wrote back in the comments. I said, "Hey, man, I really appreciate you sharing that, because damn, man, you just saved my ass, you know?" And that was such a beautiful moment. And it happened because of the slowness of the conversation online. You know, if he said that to me into my face, I may not have been able to respond so enlightened, you know, because I would have been triggered in the moment and maybe say, "Oh, who do you think you are? Well, you're a jerk too." And there was something so beautiful about slowing it down and going, okay, so, you know, this guy he has to be pointing out something that's at least partially true. Because the truth is, if you're going to be a jerk, I think that, because I felt this in myself, when I'm feeling like a jerk and I want to criticize someone, I do my best to be right. I do my best to at least be accurate, because I know I'm not being nice. So I do my best to just see, okay, well, I got to point out something that I can defend, because I'm going to be a jerk. And so when I realized that, I was like, hey, I could take the people that write negative comments to me, and I could look at it from the perspective of, well, like, you know, they're probably working really hard to find out what my blind spot is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if I were the president, I was a Republican, I would look at the smartest Democrats and the ones that were they might be big jerks, but they were the popular critics. And I bet you I could find all of my blind spots for my administration in their criticism, because that's where they make their money. They couldn't be popular if they weren't right. Now, it's not a requirement that they be nice, but I think that there's a lot of value in our critics in that way. That's what I found too.
Mm-hmm. And another fun thing for me, like when you were telling that story, what I would do, and I have done when people have come up with a specific thing of like, wow, Monique, you're really full of yourself. Guess what the post is going to be the next day?
Yeah,
of how like, full of myself I am, and like totally make fun of me. And because people, unless you take it personally, and unless you get really triggered, which I have, you know, I've had some moments of, wow, this really, really sucks and someone really hates me, and then I'll start defending myself. But for the most part, it's being able to turn it around into, oh yeah, you know, there's moments when I'm really full of myself, and this is why you should be full of yourself too. And like turn it into this whole thing of that we're allies instead of enemies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You can do that by making fun of yourself. Fabulous. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, Paolo and I made up this game that we play with each other to get ourselves out of the habit of defending ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think we told you about this one with when Reed was around at our house. We call it the violent communication game. And you know, we essentially throw things at each other that are we would typically defend. So I might say, you know, you're addicted to coffee, you know, and maybe Paola usually would defend herself against that statement. But in the context of the game, the only way to lose the game is by defending yourself. Mm-hmm. So we'll just say things, you know, to each other like, you know, you don't really love me. And the way that has to be played is that I have to look for how that's I have to agree with that statement somehow. And I don't have to like vilify myself, but I could say, okay, you know, I can see times when I'm not really being loving towards you, and you know, you're absolutely right. And I can even give you an example, because, you know, this morning when we were eating breakfast and you were talking about something and I was checking my phone and I didn't care what you had to say or whatever. But the act of not defending yourself has been a huge gift, and something I actually really feel like I learned from Byron Katie, who said that defense is the first act of war. And I really got that. I was like, oh my God, I'm starting the war once I defend myself, not them when they attack me. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate how much that wisdom you've just been embodying over the years. It's really been cool.
Thanks, honey.
Yeah.
Well, underneath everything inside of my beingness, like I've really become clear, even though I can get angry and defensive and sad and, you know, all those other emotions that we all have, like I really just want to connect. Like that's my deepest longing, is I want a space to love. And whether or not the person loves me back, like whether or not they connect, like all of that, that just has become something that I'm so grateful for when they choose to engage. And so throughout the years, that's been one of the greatest tools. And I've had people come to me years later. Like I just had this huge healing in Hawaii with a community member that she and I hadn't talked in a while. And there was just this beautiful moment of, wow, Monique, do you really understand that I would not be sitting here if you didn't keep the doors open and really connect with me, and I was able to feel that you love me. And like for me, that's so much, I would be the one that loves the most forever, like because I really get that I want to connect. And the times when I'm the most sad or the most angry, like the righteous anger comes up because it hurts so much because I'm not given a space to be able to connect with. And so for me, that's the ultimate vulnerability, is just being able to, okay, yes, it really hurts right now, and they get to have their decisions and they get to have their feelings of whatever is happening. And my reality is, I just want to love them. I just want to connect, or, you know, and that's what it always comes back to for me.
I totally get that. Yeah. It's like any news is better than no news, you know? Yeah. So I want to talk just a little bit more about writing vulnerably, and to give people maybe a few more ideas or tools. What are some prompts that you give yourself to access the spaces? Because our mind and our ego is really funny in that way, in that the things that we don't want to share are conveniently hidden under certain blankets sometimes, I find. So how do you, what are some prompts, or what are some ways that you access those parts of yourself that try to hide in the shadows?
Again, it goes back to sensations in my body and stories in my head. So I look for the things that are still scary for me, and look for the things that get my heart start pounding, or it's, you know, the different sensations of fear or defensiveness, or, you know, the places that are still wanting to hide. And so it's often I'll just sit there and do a meditation for 10 or 15 minutes and dive into, if there was something that I wasn't sharing, what would it be? And why is it? And especially with the chapters, I would sit here and do that with each of the points, you know, the bullet points and the things that I wanted to get across. It's like, okay, and if there is something I wasn't sharing, what is it? And just do that over and over and over again, so that pieces could keep coming up that might be hidden under the blankets. Like, it's like, here, I really want to see you. And there's no piece that's too taboo or that's not okay. Let's do it. and would just sit with myself. And sometimes there'd be tears, and sometimes there'd be anger, and sometimes there would be like all of these places of no, you can never say that. Like, that's the biggest thing. If there's anything inside of me that says you can never do that, yeah. Or if anyone tells me, Monique, you can never do that, guess what's gonna happen?
It's just too easy at this point, you know. Like, you're like, oh, I got it now. Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully, yeah. I can find a way that it's a win-win-win for everybody. Like, that's one of my grandest things. I love to bridge gaps and find ways that we can all be allies with one another. But at the end of the day, it's more important to me that it's real. Like, more than anything else that I want to mm-hmm. express, either in my book or with a lover or with a friend or even, you know, with my sons, it's like, here's my desires, here's my preferences. And underneath all of that, no matter how disappointing it is, or, you know, any emotion that comes up, I want the reality of what's in this moment. I want you free to be you, and me to free to be me. Mm. And that's the underlying for me for vulnerability, is that space of acceptance, of truly unconditional acceptance of where I'm at. And that includes wanting it to be something else. Like, that's all included in there. But beyond that, no matter how deeply I want something to be a specific way, I would rather it shows up in the real, whatever the reality is. Mm.
Can you say more about what's real, in terms of, maybe you can even contrast that with the unreal? I mean, how do you know what's real, and what is that like?
It's when someone's showing up out of obligation. So it's like, if someone's agreed to come and teach a class with me, which, you know, mm-hmm. business stuff is a big deal. And that's a balance where I strive to find, if that's not alive for the person, like, we scheduled something 6 months down the line and it's 2 months out now, and there's something more alive on their calendar, mm-hmm. like, that's something to talk about. But there's, like, in a relationship, say that there's something that's worked really, really well. And so we have a date night that we sit and talk about things for an hour before we go out and do our favorite thing. Like, it's really being able to not hold somebody to something, no matter how much I really enjoy it or I like it, or that's how they've shown up. It's mm-hmm. being able to offer in that moment. I guess I'm trying to say it in a tangible way, and I don't have a tangible example to give you.
But it'd be kind of like showing up without an agenda for what that person, you know, should be bringing to the table, or that kind of thing.
Or not putting your agenda above what's actually being brought to the table. Yeah. Like, it's okay to have an agenda.
Because I have just to sharing still have that, agendas. And saying, hey, this is yeah. my honest agenda, just, and I'm letting it go, but it's putting it on the table too, maybe.
And what happened for me to be able to start doing that is when I started realizing, what is the thing that I want the most? And often, like in relationship, it was, I want the person not to leave. You know, I want to mm-hmm. be able to, we can create whatever we want to do and do it, but I don't want you to leave. And so it was being able to offer back, okay, what if they have the freedom to leave? What if not only they have the freedom, but I invite them to leave every day, you know, every moment. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was so hard. And there were like tears and crying, and there was like mm-hmm. so much that I went through. But then each time, as I started realizing, here's my agenda, and or not even agenda, but like, here's my preferences. Here's what I really, really like. And where do you feeling? Like, where are you at? Like, I really want to know where you're at too. And so that there's nothing, they're not being held to what they agreed to yesterday or this morning or mm-hmm. 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But for me, what's real is what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. That's really beautiful. Hmm. Okay, so I've got one more question, Monique.
Okay.
If you were to go back, and let's say a year ago when you started writing this book, it could have been any time in your life, but if you could write yourself a note and you could slip it onto your desk or maybe your keyboard and your computer, and you could see this note when you first started writing this book, what would you say to yourself, having learned what you've learned?
It's something along the lines that it's not just me. You know, I was going to say that I'm more than enough, and I always was. I always would. But it's like, everybody is enough exactly where they're at. There's nothing that we need to do or prove. There's definitely nothing I need to do or prove. It's like, let's just show up because I am enough.
Mm-hmm. And how does that, how do you think that would influence your writing? Had you heard that a year ago? Like, what would that have inserted into your book?
A lot less stress of, is this right? Is it okay? Are people going, is it going to land in the right direction? You know, is it that, no, it, what it is that I want to share, that's enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's who I be, like who I am. That's enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what I want to offer, like with the book. If I could wave a magic wand and anyone who picks up the book and reads it, like that's what I want them to get from it, is that no matter who you are, no matter how outrageous, no matter how shy, whatever you are, that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
And you have permission to be that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I so appreciate this conversation, Monique, and I really... There's no one better to talk to, for me anyways, about this subject of, let's call it, the art of sharing vulnerably, because I love the journey you've been on, and I love that you're still on that journey and you'll be on the journey for the rest of your life, and you're just in the trenches with it all the time, and you really are just such a warrior in this arena, and I just really appreciate that.
Thanks, honey. Well, I love having you in the arena with me.
Yeah, I know. It's a pleasure. Yeah. It's fun and muddy and messy. And it's great.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you just invite me for a mud wrestle?
I did. Totally.
That's what I heard.
Open invite. Especially in Bali. It rains all the time here. You can come here. We get lots of mud.
Yes.
Rice field or something. And so what's the best way for people to reach you or to be notified when the book is ready?
Well, I have two websites. The first is juicyenlightenment.com. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So that's like my big major website. And then I travel all over the country now and teach. Mm-hmm. So people are like, where do I find you, Monique? So you can find me at whereintheworldismoniquedarling.com.
Oh, cool. Nice. And I'll put those links in the show notes. So if people want to check that out, they can head over to darkenthepage.com/017. This is the 17th episode. So awesome. Well, thank you so much, Monique. And I look forward to the next time we get to meet up.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Dave. And thanks everybody for listening today.
Thanks.